Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the week in review with Raymond Parsons and Warwick Lucas. Raymond, the other big issue is the key wage negotiations between government and the public sector unions. And just as context, there was a big dispute around year three of that three-year wage agreement that was agreed to back in 2018. Government dug in its heels, said it can't agree to what was agreed between government and the unions in that third year, and it went all the way to the Labour Appeal Court. The public sector unions lost. They're now taking it all the way to the Constitutional Court, but they've subsequently entered into new and fresh wage negotiations. They've stalemated and deadlocked again, and you've got the Public Service Minister, Senjo Mchunu, calling on solutions from the public. What solutions might we bring to bear on this impasse that will see or at least try and avoid a strike, which would be hugely damaging in the current economic environment?
Well, Michael, I think, as you rightly say, this is an issue that needs to be unpacked in the public interest because it's still a big ticket item. It arises from the budget and things that were said before the budget. In our fiscal scenario, we simply have to get this right. At the moment, it looks, as you rightly say, like a zero-sum game, either 0% or 7%. And those seem to be the sort of two alternatives. But there are still some tough negotiations that have to be undertaken legally. In other words, there's not going to be a strike in 2 or 3 days' time. There's still scope for further negotiation, try and get reconciliation, then you've got to get a strike certificate and so forth. So there's still some way to go, and there's still an opportunity to look at what are the trade-offs here. Now, you recall that someone well known to us, and that is Milton Friedman, once said there's no such thing as a free lunch. So there's no free lunch here. Whatever you decide, whether it's the total wage bill or the fringe benefits, they will have to be subject to a process of negotiation. There will be trade-offs because the government will put its case on the grounds of what it can afford, what the country can afford. And on the other hand, you'll have the union say what they think on the grounds of equity is necessary. So I think what's important here is it's important that there are inputs from various groups, because quite clearly you don't want this to end up in an impasse. As you rightly say, we are in an economically still vulnerable position. We can do without a sort of national strike of the public sector. We know also that the credit rating agencies are watching this process. What will be the outcome? How strong will the government stand on this matter? And in the meantime, since this process has started, we're now in an election year. So what does that inject into the dynamic, both on the side of the public unions and on the side of the government? So I think what's important here is that we must use the time and the processes available here to try and avoid a zero-sum game, because not only will the country lose, but our economy will lose if we don't resolve it. And I think the important point now is to say there are ideas coming to the table. It will call for a degree of flexibility, accepting that the government has fiscally got its back to the wall. But there are, we know that that's what negotiations are about. If one could reach something of a compromise that will, on the one hand, placate, in fact, the unions, that will be willing to accept in the national interest, they must settle for much less. And on the other hand, the government will find some room to maneuver, but bearing in mind that the overarching architecture is one of a trade-off and that there's no free lunch here.
And within that, I found it interesting tactically that the Public Service and Administration Minister would invite comment from the public, almost to defuse some of that potential public sympathy that the unions might think that they would receive if they were to embark on a strike. In fact, in an environment, Warwick, such as we've just had through COVID, where people in the private sector have lost jobs, have had salary cuts and bonuses frozen and that kind of thing, where you haven't seen the concomitant loss of jobs in the public sector, I don't know how much sympathy there would be. But I think most people would agree that to borrow money that you can't pay back for current expenditure is a fast track to insolvency. So what is it that the unions can't understand about this?
Well, Michael, they've never really understood. This has been a long slow-burning problem. I mean, if we consider where salaries have gone, so I would say that government salaries have probably in the last 20-odd years risen more or less 50% in real terms. So that's those real increases slowly compounded up to a big unaffordable problem. So let's take the example of teachers. Yes, they're not hugely well paid, but if you consider something like a school governing board or private teacher, they would typically be paid between 20 and 70-80% less than a government appointed teacher, for example. So the disparity in salaries between government and market in places has become more and more untenable, and it's basically then led us to a position where suddenly the government has got its hands in its pockets and it's struggling to even find the coppers. And the unions, in no small part, have played a big part in this whole rising problem. They are quite correct when they point towards government and say, your corruption is not our problem. You were rotten managers, etc., etc. Full marks. But that actually is a separate issue. Mm. The point is this. We've now come to a Waterloo. Do we fight to win, or do we just simply run around parading? What do we do?
If I could just come in quickly, Michael, and say, I think one dimension which must now be injected more than ever before, if you want to find some answers or trade-off, must be productivity in the public sector. Mm. We need a searching and intensive unpacking of the levels of, indeed, productivity in the public sector, because in a way you can say it's unfair to say one size fits all. In fact, there are highly productive members in the public sector who ought to be rewarded. But I think you now need to inject the productivity dimension in helping to find the right trade-off that will give us the best outcome for this dispute.
And that is a big issue, because for the longest time, SATU and the teachers' unions have resisted the introduction of standardized national tests below matric, the annual national assessment, for fear that these might evolve into a mechanism for performance-related pay. They've resisted technologies to track time and attendance, as well as even the mundane oversight of school inspectors. So this is a conversation that must be had, but we also need to peel away this veneer that the public sector unions are using to point the finger at government and say, well, there's corruption, so we don't want to talk about the public sector wage bill and the size of the wage bill. Yes, we need to address corruption, but we also have to address productivity and what a productivity review might look like. And Busa, along with Intellidex, produced an excellent report on this towards the back end of last year. So I'd encourage the Public Service and Administration Minister to lean on business's contribution. Business is trying to assist government here in coming up with a workable solution. And I just want to come back, Warwick, to your comment about teachers' salaries. Measured in purchasing power adjusted US dollars, they're nearly 50% higher than the OECD average. Here in South Africa. And you've got to ask yourself, and that's according to the Busa Intellidex research, what are we getting in terms of bang for buck if we are paying over the average at an OECD level? And I think quite clearly, if you look at the skills gaps and the outcomes in the public sector, we're not getting what we should get. Maybe it's because, Raymond, we've got too many public sector or public holidays in the country. I mean, we've just finished a month. We've got fortunately May Day falling on a Saturday, so there's no public holiday for that. But we're always on holiday. It's interminable. We just can't get any work done.
Well, let me say this, Michael, that if we look at it globally, we are among the highest of the countries in the world, along with Japan and the United States, with a number of our public holidays. This is a soft subject in our public policy debate, and there are sensitive cultural and religious factors involved. So I don't want to lecture people about the work ethic and indeed productivity on this matter, except to say that we could rationalize it a lot more than we do at the moment. And I just want to remind us, those who have got a memory going back to as far as 1994, that the new government actually promised, among other things, that they would rationalize public holidays. But I think that's rather fallen off the table. So I think what we need to just look at, perhaps from the point of view of rationalizing where we are with our current public holidays, is that other than the religious holidays, couldn't public holidays always fall on a Monday and avoid midweek disruption? This midweek disruption, I think, is quite a high economic cost for our economy. And then, is it necessary that now, today, that holidays that fall on a Sunday now get transferred to the Monday? I mean, what is the rationale behind that? I don't know what the original rationale was, but what is the rationale? And then finally, I might say in a topical way, although it doesn't relate specifically to a public holiday, but when we have elections, why do we have it on a Wednesday? Why not have it on a Saturday or Sunday? I mean, there are many countries that have weekend elections. So all I'm saying is, I don't want to undo the balance between work and leisure. I think I don't want to be an Uncle Scrooge here. I think people must enjoy their leisure, enjoy their public holidays. But I think we could have a better balance between productivity and leisure if we reviewed how we can streamline the number of public holidays that we have, and to make them more effective from an economic point of view as well as from a leisure point of view.
Raymond, the other big issue is the key wage negotiations between government and the public sector unions. And just as context, there was a big dispute around year three of that three-year wage agreement that was agreed to back in 2018. Government dug in its heels, said it can't agreed to what was agreed between government and the unions in that third year, and it went all the way to the Labour Appeal Court. The public sector unions lost. They're now taking it all the way to the Constitutional Court, but they've subsequently entered into new and fresh wage negotiations. They've stalemated and deadlocked again, and you've got the Public Service Minister, Senja Mchunu, calling on solutions from the public. What solutions might we bring to bear on this impasse that will see, or at least try and avoid, a strike, which would be hugely damaging in the current economic environment?
Well, Michael, I think, as you rightly say, this is an issue that needs to be unpacked in the public interest, because it's still a big ticket item. It arises from the budget and things that were said before the budget. In our fiscal scenario, we simply have to get this right. At the moment, it looks, as you rightly say, like a zero-sum game, either 0% or 7%. And those seem to be the sort of two alternatives. But there are still some tough negotiations that have to be undertaken legally. In other words, there's not going to be a strike in 2 or 3 days' time. There's still scope for further negotiation, try and get reconciliation. Then you've got to get a strike certificate and so forth. So there's still some way to go, and there's still an opportunity to look at what are the trade-offs here. Now, you'll recall that someone well known to us, and that is Milton Friedman, once said there's no such thing as a free lunch. So there's no free lunch here. Whatever you decide, whether it's the total wage bill or the fringe benefits, they will have to be subject to a process of negotiation. There will be trade-offs, because the government will put its case on the grounds of what it can afford, what the country can afford. And on the other hand, you'll have the union say what they think on the grounds of equity is necessary. So I think what's important here is it's important that there are inputs from various groups, because quite clearly you don't want this to end up in an impasse. As you rightly say, we are in an economically still vulnerable position. We can do without a sort of national strike of the public sector. We know also that the credit rating agencies are watching this process. What will be the outcome? How strong will the government stand on this matter? And in the meantime, since this process has started, we're now in an election year. So what does that inject into the dynamic, both on the side of the public unions and on the side of the government? So I think what's important here is that we must use the time and the processes available here to try and avoid a zero-sum game, because not only will the country lose, but our economy will lose if we don't resolve it. And I think the important point now is to say there are ideas coming to the table. It will call for a degree of flexibility, accepting that the government has fiscally got its back to the wall. But there are we know that that's what negotiations are about. If one could reach something of a compromise that will, on the one hand, placate, in fact, the unions, so that will be willing to accept in the national interest, they must settle for much less. And on the other hand, the government will find some room to maneuver. But bearing in mind that the overarching architecture is one of a trade-off and that there's no free lunch here.
And within that, I found it interesting, tactically, that the Public Service and Administration Minister would invite comment from the public, almost to defuse some of that potential public sympathy that the unions might think that they would receive if they were to embark on a strike. In fact, in an environment, Warwick, such as we've just had through COVID, where people in the private sector have lost jobs, have had salary cuts and bonuses frozen and that kind of thing, where you haven't seen the concomitant loss of jobs in the public sector, I don't know how much sympathy there would be. But I think most people would agree that to borrow money that you can't pay back for current expenditure is a fast track to insolvency. So what is it that the unions can't understand about this?
Well, Michael, they've never really understood. This has been a long, slow-burning problem. If we consider where salaries have gone, so I would say that government salaries have probably in the last 20-odd years risen more or less 50% in real terms. So that's those real increases slowly compounded up to a big unaffordable problem. So let's take the example of teachers. Yes, they're not hugely well paid, but if you consider something like a school governing board or private teacher, they would typically be paid between 20 and 70-80% less than a government-appointed teacher, for example. So the disparity in salaries between government and market in places has become more and more untenable, and it's basically then led us to a position where suddenly the government has got its hands in its pockets and it's struggling to even find the coppers. And the unions, in no small part, have played a big part in this whole rising problem. They are quite correct when they point towards government and say, your corruption is not our problem. You are rotten managers, etc., etc. Full marks. But that actually is a separate issue. Mm. The point is this. We've now come to a Waterloo. Do we fight to win or do we just simply run around parading? What do we do?
If I could just come in quickly, Michael, and say, I think one dimension which must now be injected more than ever before, if you want to find some answers or a trade-off, must be productivity in the public sector. Mm. We need a searching and intensive unpacking of the levels of, indeed, productivity in the public sector, because in a way you can say it's unfair to say one size fits all. In fact, there are highly productive members in the public sector who ought to be rewarded. But I think you now need to inject the productivity dimension in helping to find the right trade-off that will give us the best outcome for this dispute.
And that is a big issue, because for the longest time, SATU and the teachers' unions have resisted the introduction of standardized national tests below matric, the annual national assessment, for fear that these might evolve into a mechanism for performance-related pay. They've resisted technologies to track time and attendance, as well as even the mundane oversight of school inspectors. So this is a conversation that must be had, but we also need to peel away this veneer that the public sector unions are using to point the finger at government and say, well, there's corruption, so we don't want to talk about the public sector wage bill and the size of the wage bill. Yes, we need to address corruption, but we also have to address productivity and what a productivity review might look like. And Busa, along with Intellidex, produced an excellent report on this towards the back end of last year. So I'd encourage the Public Service and Administration Minister to lean on business's contribution. Business is trying to assist government here in coming up with a workable solution. And I just want to come back, Warwick, to your comment about teachers' salaries. Measured in purchasing power adjusted US dollars, they're nearly 50% higher than the OECD average. here in South Africa. And you've got to ask yourself, and that's according to the Busa IntelliDex research, what are we getting in terms of bang for buck if we are paying over the average at an OECD level? And I think quite clearly, if you look at the skills gaps and the outcomes of the public sector, we're not getting what we should get. Maybe it's because, Raymond, we've got too many public sector or public holidays in the country. I mean, we've just finished a month. We've got fortunately May Day falling on a Saturday, so there's no public holiday for that. But we it's always on holiday. It's interminable. We just can't get any work done.
Well, let me say this, Michael, that if we look at it globally, we are among the highest of the countries in the world, along with Japan and the United States, with a number of our public holidays. This is a soft subject in our public policy debate, and there are sensitive cultural and religious factors involved. So I don't want to lecture people about the work ethic and indeed productivity on this matter, except to say that we could rationalize it a lot more than we do at the moment. And I just want to remind us, those who have got a memory going back to as far as 1994, that the new government actually promised, among other things, that they would rationalize public holidays. But I think that's rather fallen off the table. So I think what we need to just look at, perhaps from the point of view of rationalizing where we are with our current public holidays, is that other than the religious holidays, couldn't public holidays always fall on a Monday and avoid midweek disruption? This midweek disruption, I think, is quite a high economic cost for our economy. And then, is it necessary that now, today, that holidays that fall on a Sunday now get transferred to the Monday? I mean, what is the rationale behind that? I don't know what the original rationale was, but what is the rationale? And then finally, I might say, in a topical way, although it doesn't relate specifically to a public holiday, but when we have elections, why do we have it on a Wednesday? Why not have it on a Saturday or Sunday? I mean, there are many countries that have weekend elections. So all I'm saying is I don't want to undo the balance between work and leisure. I think I don't want to be an Uncle Scrooge here. I think people must enjoy their leisure, enjoy their public holidays. But I think we could have a better balance between productivity and leisure if we reviewed how we can streamline the number of public holidays that we have, and to make them more effective from an economic point of view as well as from a leisure point of view.
Well, it certainly feeds into the whole conversation around productivity and just doing more with what you have rather than actually pulling anything off the table. Raymond Parsons, Professor in the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, and Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer at Galileo Asset Managers, with your Week in Review.